WVQC, People Powered Radio. WVQC LP Cincinnati.
We can rebuild him. We have the technology.
95.7 FM.
Better, stronger, faster.
Coming to you from Cincinnati's Computer Cooperative Studios, you're listening to Hemp Rock Radio on WVQC LP Cincinnati 95.7 FM. WVQC LP, as a community radio station, serves only to open its airwaves to responsible, divergent points of view. WVQC LP does not endorse any political campaign or candidates. The opinions expressed on Hemp Rock Radio do not reflect the views of WVQC LP, Media Bridges, its staff, or Board of Trustees. The opinions expressed reflect the views of Hemp Rock and our guests. Thanks for listening. Welcome, Hemp Rockers, to Radio Free Queen City and the Monday edition of Hemp Rock Radio with the Happy Hemptress and joint hosts, the Burn Man, and featuring the Pottsbury Bakery and Hemp Rock Cafe on WVQC LP 95.7 FM, the voice of the Queen City.
WVQC.org. 95.7 is online at WVQC.org. Hemp Rock is online at HempRock.com. The Hemp Rock Hemp Line is at 513-684-HEMP. That's 513-684-HEMP.
To talk to us during the show, call 513-564-9600. That's 513-564-9600.
And now, here's Hemp Rock Radio with all things hemp, marijuana, the drug war, and more, including guests, music, news, food, and lots of fun here on 95.7 FM WVQC LP, low power to the people.
CincyGroove.com will be celebrating its 4-year anniversary on November 18th at the Madison Theater in Covington, Kentucky. Music for the evening will be provided by the headliner, Acoustic Hookah, and local openers, Hickory Robot and Carol Walker. CincyGroove.com will also be holding a canned food drive and winter clothing drive to benefit the Free Store Food Bank and St. Vincent de Paul. This will be an all-ages event with doors opening at 7 p.m. and the show beginning at 8 p.m. For more information about the event, go to CincyGroove.com.
Howdy.
Hey.
Is there anybody in there? Not if you can hear me. Is anybody at home? Come on now. I hear you're feeling down. I can ease your pain and get you on your feet again. Relax. I'll need some information first. Just some basic facts. Well, can you show me where it hurts? There is no pain you are receding. A distant ship smoke on the horizon. You're only coming through in waves. Your lips move, but I can't hear what you're saying. When I was a child, I had a fever. Just like two balloons. Well, now I've got that feeling once again. I can't explain, you would not understand. This is not how I am. I okay. Just a little pinprick, there'll be no more. But you might be a little sick. Can you stand up? I do believe it's working good. That'll keep you going through the show. Well, come on, it's time to go. There is no pain, you are receding. A distant ship smoke on the horizon. You're only coming through in waves. Your lips move, but I can't hear what you're saying. When I was a child, I caught a fleeting glimpse out of the corner of my eye. I turned to look, but it was gone. I cannot put my finger on it now. The child is grown, the dream is gone. And I have become comfortably numb.
Cheech and Chong, and you're listening to Hemp Rock Radio on Radio Free Queens City, WVQC.org, Cincinnati's
95.7
FM.
And of course, it is Hemp Rock Radio. I am the Happy Hemptress. Rolling up the pot is, of course, the Burn Man. So in the meantime, I'm going to go ahead and hit that next clip, and then we'll bring our guest in. Of course, this song is dedicated to our next guest. It's from Government Mule. It's called Don't Step on the Grass, Sam. Did I say that right, or did that not get it? This is from Government Mule, Don't Step on the Grass, Sam. And, of course, it is dedicated to our guest that will be with us in just a few minutes, Michael Krawitz, Veterans for Medical Marijuana. It is Hemp Rock Radio. We'll be back in a few minutes.
In this wasteland, finally find a program, gonna deal with Mary Jane, ready for a trip into the headland. Obnoxious Joe comes on the screen, longer this gets him righteous self. And one more guy who doesn't count, his hair and his clothes are much too out. Well, pushing back his glasses, Sam says he was elected by the masses. With that in mind, he starts to unwind, a vicious attack upon the grasses. Well, it's mean and evil, wicked and nasty. Disagree with me.
Please give up. You've already lost the battle.
Here we go. Well, it's mean and evil, wicked and nasty.
Don't step on the grass.
It will ruin our fair country.
Don't be such an ass.
It will hurt your sons and daughters.
I'm Gatewood Galbraith, criminal law attorney and the last free man in America. You're listening to Hemp Rock Radio on Radio Free Queen City, WVQC.org, WVQCLP, Cincinnati 95.7 FM.
Thank you for that, Gatewood. And, of course, it is Hemp Rock Radio. I am the Happy Hemptress. Rolling up the pot is, of course, the Burn Man. Now, the song, of course, as I said before the break, was dedicated to our guest. And, of course, the band was Government Mule. Some of the guys from the Allman Brothers with the cover, Don't Step on the Grass, Sam, from Steppenwolf. Now, why are we playing that? I love to play it, and I play it a lot. But today is dedicated to our guest, Michael Krawitz. Are you there?
I'm here.
How you doing today, Michael?
Doing well, thanks.
Fantastic. Now, of course, Michael, you are with the Veterans for Medical Marijuana Association, is that correct?
Veterans for Medical Cannabis Access.
Medical Cannabis Access. I knew it was some acronym like that. Well, now, you know, we talk a lot about medical here, we do, and we even mentioned the stuff about the veteran stuff, including talking to our local guy, Tony, who you know, Master Sergeant Tony Vance. And you've been kind of leading this for these guys for a while now and taking the reins in confronting the VA over medical marijuana. So I want to talk about that and specifically something that happened this past week. But give us a background, what your military service is, how you became a veteran, and what led to your medical marijuana use.
Okay, yeah, that's a half an hour by itself, it sounds like. I went into the United States Air Force. It seemed like a good choice at the time. You know, young person facing your typical choices of going into student loans or getting a job and working your way up the chain just leaving that whole situation, going into the Air Force. And I thought that was a good idea. And, you know, today I still think that was a pretty good idea. I don't know that I would do it again, but I still think it was a good idea. That's a contradiction, I guess. But I really did my best in the military. I was in the United States Air Force. I went through copious amounts of training to be an electronic warfare systems technician. Worked on board aircraft on avionics, and I was pretty good at my job. And I fell victim to a poorly constructed roadway over in Guam, USA, in the South Pacific. Coral bed roads, very slippery with no lights, and I fell victim of to that roadway situation on my way home from dinner.
Wow.
And became injured and just completely changed my life path. The path that I was on, I was getting ready to go into helicopter training to become a pilot, and I was actually going to switch over to the Army. They were going to give me a pay grade and make me a warrant officer as soon as I got out of school, and I was going to be a helicopter pilot. But instead, I got to tour the medevac system and went to Hawaii and recuperated. And
I guess that's a nice place to recuperate.
If you're going to recuperate somewhere, I think Triple Army Medical Center in Hawaii is a good place to recuperate.
Yeah.
But it was a completely different life path for me from that point on. I didn't really know where it was taking me. Now I can see it took me here. But at the time, it was just one step in front of the other, very small steps. And, I came to know cannabis in the usual way for a person from the 1970s, growing up in New Jersey. And, what I like to tell people what I knew about marijuana, I learned from Cheech and Chong movies, and that's pretty true.
Now, real quick, how old were you when you started smoking?
I probably inhaled, as the president would say, in junior high school.
Me too. I was 13.
Yeah, but the thing is, I left that behind and went into the military, and, like a lot of my peers did. Unlike a lot of my peers, though, I got violently trajectory, change, and wound up becoming a medical patient. And at first, I didn't see the connection. I didn't see marijuana as a medicine, and especially not a medicine in my world. It was still, I still had this world view of using cannabis as a recreational drug, but it's a genesis that you go through as a patient.
Yeah.
Part of the genesis is this long trail of chemical substances that the doctors have you try to ameliorate your symptoms, your distress from your condition. And I have, a lot of problems. Loss of spleen, messed up my intestine. I broke my right hip. I've got an artificial hip prosthetic, and on and on. There are a lot of trauma, and a lot of result of that trauma is ongoing pain and ongoing problems that you need medication for. And I've been not only through medication, but dozens of treatments as well. And over time, came to find that cannabis actually was an important medicine for me. It was first prescribed to me in the mid-1990s over in Holland. And that was, you know, the first official change in that relationship, you know, between the hippie 70s perspective and you know, medical cannabis from a pharmacy perspective, which is very different, really.
Yeah.
And that, I think, you know, if I could divert right there for a moment, I've you know, come to see that as one of our biggest problems in medical cannabis is the people that have a relationship with cannabis and know it from college days and have quite a romantic memory of their time with cannabis and their friends. And I don't think that it helps them for us to be talking about it medically. I think it challenges that whole relationship that they had. And that's unfortunate, but that's a casualty of the drug war. I'm sorry about that, people. But yeah, you need to grow up. Cannabis is a medicine. And though you may have used it appropriately or inappropriately in your youth, it's different now, and you need to look at it differently. And when a patient is using cannabis for medicine, they don't get the giddy, want to, you know, empty your refrigerator and listen to Pink Floyd all night, you know.
Well, I'll be honest, I would probably do that anyway, but...
Yeah, well, you may have that proclivity.
you didn't hear the beginning. You didn't hear... Sorry, you didn't hear the beginning of the show, did you?
No, I missed that. I'm sorry. It's not a given side effect of THC. You know, it's not in the warnings on the PDR.
Right, well, the opening song was Comfortably Numb by a group called Luther Wright and the Wrongs, because we were, as of last week and today, doing Pink Floyd covers, but that's another story.
That's awesome. I think I did hear that just recently. That's an awesome song.
So anyway, go ahead.
That takes us up to, you know, where we are now. I'm a disabled vet. I've been going through the VA system for 20-something years. I've been through their whole ringer. You know, I can give you the whole laundry list of medications that they've tried me on. And at this point, when I have access to it, cannabis together with a little bit of opiate pain medicine is all I need. And the opiates are the problem, not the cannabis.
Right.
You know, the VA and I have had kind of a thing going on for a while. It's gotten to be a national thing, but it started out as a very, very private thing. And it really has to do with something called a pain contract. And I think it's worth explaining to everybody, you know, what
Absolutely.
A pain contract is. If you go to a doctor today for pain treatment, no matter where it is, inside the VA or not, there's a likelihood that doctor is going to hand you a form, and it might be called a pain contract. I only use the words pain contract if it's offensive, and I'll explain that in a second. But really what the doctor should be handing you is an informed consent form, something that warns you about the danger of the medication, gives you your responsibilities as a patient. You sign it. We do that all the time.
Yeah.
Where it crosses the line and where it's called a pain contract is when it threatens the patient, where it threatens that if you violate the terms of the contract that they'll discontinue your pain treatment. That is unethical. If it's unethical, it really can't be part of the standard of care. If it's not part of the standard of care, it's not medical. Besides, it's an administrative form. Anything on an administrative form and carried out connected to it is an administrative action, and it's unethical to administratively deny someone pain treatment.
Yes.
Besides, you have constitutional rights, and those rights are, I think, most visible and evident in the VA system. That's why I've been fighting this inside the VA system. I refuse to sign the pain contract under the grounds that it would incriminate myself. You know, I am being treated by the federal government. The federal government has to follow the Constitution. They just can't come up with silly, arbitrary rules like any doctor office, you know, might under their own free speech. They don't have free speech at the VA. They have to follow the U.S. Constitution. That their speech is limited by the Constitution. Mine isn't. And you know, the thing is that when I said I wasn't going to sign that pain contract, I thought, well, you know, I'll call it bluff, I guess, I was thinking. I really didn't think they would cut me off of my pain treatment just for not signing the document. Well, they did.
Yeah.
And that has started a war back and forth between me and the VA that's lasted over 10 years. A salvo in that war brought me all the way to the top of the food chain in the VA, where I met with ethics officials and pain management officials at the VA. And that work connected with other work that was done by Marty Chilcutt out in Michigan.
Mm-hmm.
And when I started this organization, I took it over from him. He had been working with veterans organizations trying to coordinate, and I took it over, made it more patient advocacy. And together with what he had done out in Michigan, I was able to have the right questions to ask to go to the top officials at the VA. And those questions about pain contracts led to the VA coming out with its very first medical marijuana directive. The question I asked specifically was, if you are following the state law and you're using marijuana pursuant to a recommendation, should you have your pain management disturbed at the VA? And of course, the question was answered by the Undersecretary for Health himself, who said that no, you shouldn't have your pain medicine administratively denied.
Something, now, that was in a letter that they sent to you, official letter from
them. That letter, when I started getting somewhere with publicizing it, actually became the directive. You know, they negotiated with me about passing a directive, so I wouldn't, you know, publicize that letter. That letter would have been the story.
Yeah.
Instead, it wound up being a New York Times front page article about the new directive.
Yeah.
Which I'm happy about.
Yeah, it should be.
I'm happy that the VA did that, and I'm happy that the directive is out there.
Now, I have a question. That directive, of course, was about the states that have medical marijuana. So how does that affect somebody, for instance, Kentucky or Ohio? Neither of the states have medical marijuana. What does that say to the VA, to guys who's ran into that kind of an issue?
Well, the VA doesn't work that way, is the answer. This is an anomaly. It's an anomaly in a couple ways. First, it's the first time that the federal government, to my knowledge, has ever given up any power to the states in any way, shape, or form in the drug war. And they clearly have taken their lead from the states on this issue. That's interesting. But also, the VA is a non-state-related entity. In other words, they're completely unrelated to state activities. They don't know the law in a state. They,
right.
they would have no idea whether you were complying with the law in a state or not. The only thing that they would be able to know would be if you had a valid recommendation that was written by a doctor pursuant to their, you know, their visit with you in the course of their professional practice.
But that's, of course, the veterans in the medical states would be afraid to show those recommendations for fear that they would be hassled and denied their medicine.
Well, there's the rub, isn't it? And,
yeah.
and I guess that takes you back to Friday, you know, what you want to talk about with my incident at the VA.
Coming to you from the Cincinnati Computer Cooperative Studios, this is WVQCLP Cincinnati, 95.7 FM.
Cincinnati musicians, interested in submitting your music to be included in our local music library? CDs can be mailed to WVQC at 1100 Ray Street, Cincinnati, Ohio 45202, 513-651-4171, extension 11, or email to wvqcprogramming@mediabridges.org. Radio edits only, please.
CincyGroove.com will be celebrating its 4-year anniversary on November 18th at the Madison Theater in Covington, Kentucky. Music for the evening will be provided by the headliner Acoustacuca and local openers Hickory Robot and Carol Walker. CincyGroove.com will also be holding a canned food drive and winter clothing drive to benefit the Free Store Food Bank and St. Vincent de Paul. This will be an all-ages event with doors opening at 7 p.m. and the show beginning at 8 p.m. For more information about the event, go to CincyGroove.com.
Senior Bull here, artist for Hemp Rock's Reefer Roach and Pottsbury Dope Boy, and you're listening to Hemp Rock Radio on Radio Free Queen City, WVQC.org, Cincinnati's 95.7 FM on the airwaves.
And, of course, it is Hemp Rock Radio. I am the Happy Hemptress. Rolling up the pot is, of course, the Burn Man. To our guest, Michael Krawitz, are you there?
And I think that you need to talk to Tony, Master Sergeant Vance, because in his case, what he did was, at my prompting, he put them on the spot when they put him in that spot. And he said, what regulation are you citing? When you say you need to do this, what law, you know, federal law regulation are you citing? At first, you're going to laugh. But it's absolutely true.
Yeah.
At first, they cited the Marijuana Tax Act.
Of which you can still go buy a tax stamp in the state of Kentucky, by the way.
Yeah, but not from the Marijuana Tax Act from the federal government.
Yes,
anymore.
The IRS. That's
Anslinger's Marijuana Tax Act I'm talking about here.
Right.
So anyway, what they wound up finding out was something that I found out and has been formative in my work, and that is there is no federal law, rule, or regulation that is what they're complying with. It doesn't exist.
For them or the regular doctors.
For any doctor.
Right.
They do not need a drug test for marijuana. They do not need to make you sign a pain contract.
In fact, Tony, isn't it true that some years ago the Supreme Court ruled, this was coming out since California's Prop 215 took place, that medicalized California, that they cannot go after the doctors for their license for recommending medical marijuana, because they were going to try to do that, but the Supreme Court said no, leave the doctors alone.
That's true. That's the Conant decision. But unfortunately, what I found out working with the attorneys that I've been working with across the country is there is a question, a very definite question, as to whether VA doctors have free speech.
Yeah, right.
I don't know that they do. It seems apparent that they don't, because they are being told, and that goes back to that directive. We should tell people what that directive actually says.
Yeah.
It warns doctors in the VA not to write a recommendation. It says that you absolutely cannot fill out any state documentation as a VA doctor. And that, you know, again, would be a straight-up violation of Conant if it were outside the VA. We're waiting for doctors inside the VA to act on that. We really can't do much about that until they do.
Yeah.
And then a second thing is they said that you cannot have cannabis on the campus, that you have to keep it off of the federal property, which, you know, on its face seems pretty obvious. But then also you say to yourself, wait, if I'm a medical patient in a legal state and I'm in the hospital because I'm a medical patient and I'm sick, they're going to tell me I can't have my medicine under that circumstance?
Yeah.
That's a non-starter. The one case that we know of out in Los Angeles County, the judge threw it out.
Good.
Just absolutely just threw it out. And then, of course, finally, the thing that was of most interest to us is that if you are participating in a state program, that you will not be punished, that otherwise seemingly conflicting things like drug abuse treatment or pain management would not be affected administratively by that participation. Now, if I were a patient being hassled and I could get to a doctor that was in a neighboring state where it was actively being used as a medicine by state law and get that doctor to write me a recommendation where you would be complying with that state law if you lived there, I would bring that to my doctor at the VA.
Yeah. But now, go ahead.
But, you know, again, get back to my situation.
Yeah.
I've had a lot of vets come to me and say, well, I've talked to my doctor at the VA, you know, about medical marijuana, and they treated me like a criminal. I was followed around by police, this and that. And I believed them. I certainly believed them. But until I experienced it myself, I really couldn't totally understand. And what happened in my case was I've been seeing this doctor for many years now in this impasse over the pain contract. I go in, I say, have you changed? She says no. You know, we
say that again. You got cut out. Repeat that again.
Yeah. So I go in there. I asked her, you know, is the policy still in effect? She says yes.
I think you have a call coming in. Let them wait. But repeat that again. It cuts you out. Sorry.
I'm sorry about that.
That's all right.
I could sit here all day and the phone will never ring. The minute I get on the phone to talk with
that's
you.
That's okay.
Where was I?
You asked the same question over and over again about your contract, about getting your meds.
Yeah. So it had become a very routine thing. I come into the doctor's office. I say, hey, you know, is the policy still in effect? The doctor says, yes, the policy is still in effect. She makes a note that I'm still in pain. They're not treating my pain. At this point, they're actually paying for an outside doctor to treat my pain through fee basis. They're still responsible to treat my pain. And since I certainly am eligible for the pain treatment, I just went to the very first doctor outside the VA, and they're treating my pain. So that's where we've been at this standoff. But on Friday, I saw a different doctor. And it's important to back you know, rewind just slightly. I've had colleagues that have told me, you know, hey, they're not telling you the truth, because the doctor had told me to try to get me to sign that pain contract. You know, if you test positive for marijuana, we'll never take away your pain treatment. You know, I know that you're a medical patient. You know, I've got your prescription on file here. You know, this isn't about that. You know, it's just about following the rules. Da, da, da. Well, my colleagues told me that that was a lie, and I kept defending her. I kept defending the system. And sure enough, the very first time I saw a different doctor, just happened to go in there, and the doctor that I routinely see wasn't there. I was issued a different doctor. The doctor looked in my file, saw those recommendations that I've had on file for many, many years, made many, many assumptions, didn't ask me a bloody thing. And when I left the doctor's office, she told the federal police in the facility that I was a marijuana user, that I used marijuana medically, and that they should hassle me and search me. And they did. They detained me. They interrogated me.
How long did they keep you?
They only detained me a short while, but I'll tell you, it was those kind of seconds that are real long.
Yeah, right.
You know, I was there for a few minutes. It seemed like several days.
Yeah.
It was very intimidating. These are two, you know, these are the guys from Matrix with the little wire in their ear.
Now, you said what the doctor started saying is that you were mentally disturbed or something, and they were even threatening you?
Well, this is part of what happened in the actual clinic appointment. I'm there, you know, absolute routine stuff. schedule a ultrasound, you know, put me in for this colonoscopy test, you know, this kind of routine junk that you have to do as a patient. And then all of a sudden, we get to this pain thing where I was just supposed to say, you know, I'm still in pain. Will you treat my pain? She says, no, you haven't signed a pain contract until you sign that and pee in the bottle for us. Connected, because that's also connected to the pain contract.
Right.
All the pain contracts require you to pee in a bottle, and it's not a medical test. They're just checking you for compliance with that administrative form.
They're just looking for pot, that's
They're
all.
Just looking for pot, really. I mean, any other drug. They test for 6 or 7 commonly used street drugs.
Yeah.
That's what they test for.
Yeah.
And they punitively, you know, use that test punitively. So anyway, when she got to the point, she was going to explain to me why it was a federal law, you know, just like what Tony did. I asked her, you know, straight up, what rule are you going by that you say I have to pee in a bottle, that I have to sign this pain contract? And she starts reading to me the medical marijuana directive.
Wow.
It was in my record. I had given it to the doctor the last time I was in. It was that long ago. It was brand new.
Yeah.
And it was written right there, so I think she was reading that to me as proof that I was wrong. And I tried to be subtle and say, you know, what has that got to do with me? You know, why are you reading that? And then finally I drew the line. I said, please stop reading that. I know what it says. I was there. I helped produce that thing in a way.
Yeah.
And, oh, boy, did she get indignant then. She just was sure that I was just, you know, just a flunky, you know, yanking her chain. She made all these assumptions. And she said, we should drag you upstairs and have you checked for dementia.
Well, you know, she's the type of person then that thinks she knows it all, and that anything outside of her little box, they're crazy.
That's exactly that seems like an exact assessment of this person.
Yeah.
She really did make a lot of assumptions based on a very incomplete set of information. And you know, for once, maybe she had been in the face of a lot of vets that said a lot of things that seemed outrageous, but she should check some of those things. Because the ones I was saying are easily verifiable.
Right, right.
The even funnier thing, you're going to love this, is when I persisted, she said, yeah, you and Abby Hoffman.
Right. I saw that in the thing. That is, well, you know, so now what happened? You put a complaint in, and happened from there?
The whole thing is very suspicious and strange, because I was sure that she called the police, because when I asked for a piece of paper to write down that Abby Hoffman quote, I had to get that accurate. I had to make sure it was a perfect quote. I actually wrote it down and read it to her and made sure it was, you know, and when I was making that fuss about writing things down, she picked up the phone, didn't talk to anyone, and pushed a button. And when I saw the police outside the door when I went to leave the doctor's office, I thought for sure she had called them. But the police assured me that no, someone from across the hall had called the police saying that they had heard voices coming from the treatment room. And now that's very strange, because the police officers also told me that they were standing out in the hall for, quote, a long time, and, quote, didn't hear much of anything. So the whole thing is strange, but the bottom line is that benefits me, and it benefits our collective case here, because if she had called the police, maybe she could make a case that he was nutty and talking about marijuana and it made me scared. Then it might seem relevant, you know? But if she didn't even call the police, then what possible reason would she have to divulge my personal medical file information to the police?
Right.
And the police, you have to understand, came back from, quote, getting her side of the story, hadn't even talked to me yet.
Right.
And the very first thing out of his mouth was that, you know, doctor, she's actually an LPN, but he called her a doc. The doc told me, you use medical marijuana. You got marijuana on you? I'm going to have to arrest you if you have marijuana. This is a federal, I don't care if it's legal by state law, you'll get arrested here. I mean, really got in my face.
Wow.
Yeah. So that's a violation of federal law. You can't divulge personal medical information.
Right.
I can.
Right.
I'm a citizen. I can say whatever I want, you know,
right.
to a certain extent. FCC rules apply, as you say.
Right.
Unfortunately, I'd say that's the majority of patients' experience across this country, and
that
is a straight-up violation of their medical ethics and your rights as a patient. Where are you supposed to get treatment? I mean, where are you supposed to get... even if you were a methadone recipient for drug addiction and you got hurt, they would still be required to treat your pain.
Even if
you were in prison for drug dealing and drug using and drug addiction, they'd still have to treat your pain. They cannot refuse your pain treatment because you are a, quote, medical marijuana user.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's not the end of the federal approach these days. I don't know how much you've talked on your show about this, but
a lot, yeah.
My email has been just ringing off the hook with attacks from the federal government. The IRS going after dispensaries.
Oh,
the,
terrible.
ATF going after medical marijuana patients, gun rights.
Right.
You know, it seems like we actually did better under our adversaries like George W. Bush,
I know,
the medical marijuana movement, than we do under our quote friends like President Obama.
Oh, I know, it's terrible. Listen, we're about out of time. I real quick want to run down. You have a story on your Facebook: marijuana study of traumatized veterans stuck in regulatory limbo, and it was a Washington Post story. Real quick, what is that?
Well, go ahead and everybody check out, you know, the just go on Google. If you type in cannabis and PTSD, you'll come up with a bunch of stuff right now. That is relating to Rick Doblin's multi-applied psychedelic studies. FDA approval. We got FDA approval,
yes,
to do a study on cannabis for vets. And only marijuana has extra regulatory hurdles. And
yeah,
those extra regulatory hurdles are holding us back from doing that research.
Yeah, and that's
also
with MAPS, the Multidisciplinary Association for Psychedelic Studies, who,
right,
in
right,
fact, has a conference coming up. But go ahead.
And if you go to http://wh.gov, as in White House, wh.gov/4XD, that comes to a petition that we put on the White House server to demand that the president, you know, look into this post-traumatic stress treatment. And the Rick Doblin study is obviously the first line that we would have to you know, get this recognized by the federal government,
right,
finally.
Right. Well, listen, we're about out of time, so real quick, give a rundown of your websites and any contact information you want folks, including the veterans out there, to contact you for getting this thing fixed.
Well, absolutely. Our website is Veterans for Medical Cannabis, all written out in words, connected, veteransformedicalcannabis.org. And also, we work very closely with Patients at a Time. They're having a conference coming up in Arizona,
yeah,
that's going to be with Dr. Andy Weil, and we're going to be participating with that as well. That's medicalcannabis.com. And just since I have 2 seconds left, I'm sure I want to say a shout out to Dana Beal out there in the hospital.
Absolutely.
Wish you well. Had a heart attack. And,
yes.
Didn't spend a heck of a lot of time imprisoned until he was pulled out for medical reasons.
Right.
Our wishes go to him, and thanks, Ed, for helping him out.
Absolutely, definitely. And, of course, Gatewood was his attorney that day. I actually have a website up for Patients at a Time for a video, and we'll talk about that more in the show, so if you can tune in and check that out, listen about that. We're going to be talking about the Prohibition series on PBS, and the narrator is Peter Coyote, who has also been the narrator for What If Cannabis Cured Cancer, and you can go to the medicalcannabis.com, which is the Patients at a Time website, or I guess one of their websites, about that video. So they're involved in a lot of stuff, including what you were just talking about.
If I have time for one last word,
sure.
A message to everybody out there that's, you know, in a situation where they've been told, oh, you have to choose between cannabis and pain medicine, even though it works together as an adjunct.
Yeah.
You know that we're working at the top level. We're not going to quit until we've changed that policy nationally and make a point of making them make it known to everyone down the food chain. So.
Yeah, yeah. I forgot what I was going to say, that later in the show I also have a clip by Dana Beal, station ID for us, that he did last year. And so we are definitely keeping him in our thoughts and making sure that people are informed on what's going on with him. Agree with you? Thoughts are out there for Dana Beal.
So. All righty. Thanks for having me.
Michael, thanks for joining us. I appreciate it. We'll have the archive of the show up at the WEEDRadioNetwork.com real soon, and you can pass that around for people that missed the show with you. And stay tuned. We'll let you know. Tony's going to be coming on soon as well in the future.
Great.
Awesome. Thank you, Michael.
Thanks for WVQC out there as well.
Absolutely, and thank you for all the work that you do.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Alrighty. It is Hemp Rock Radio. We're going to cut to the next song. It is, of course, dedicated also to him. It is The Toys with Uncle Sam. Leave us pot smokers alone. We'll be back after the break.
Hi, I'm Dana Beal from Cures Not Wars and the Worldwide Marijuana March, and you're listening to Hemp Rock Radio on Radio Free Queen City, WVQC.org, Cincinnati's 95.7 FM.
Murderers keep murdering. The churches keep a burning, the rapists keep a raping, and the tide ain't turning. Uncle Sam, for all your power, things get worse every hour. It seems to me your energy's a wasting, chasing my friends and me. So hey, Uncle Sam, hey there, Uncle Sam,
leave us pot smokers alone.
Keep terrorizing, our leaders keep a lying, the haters keep a hating, and the planet's dying. Uncle Sam, do what's proper, call off your dogs and your helicopters. The problems of society were not caused by my friends and me. Be imprisoned, we just peace and love, sleep off and brotherhood freaks. A touch of Mother Nature never made nobody violent, never made nobody hate nobody or break nobody's peace. Since we've never been told to be harmful, don't you tell me no lies with your caffeine, codeine, nicotine eyes. The cannabis man is just recent, just since 1938 to be legalized and realize it. You made a big mistake.
Hey! Uncle Sam!
Hey there, Uncle Sam!
Leave us pot smokers alone.
Uncle Sam!
Leave us pot smokers alone.
Uncle Sam!
Leave us pot smokers alone. Leave us pot smokers alone.
Uncle Sam!
Despite a decades-long drug war, billions of dollars spent, and millions of Americans locked up in prisons, drug use rates have remained relatively constant. Any economist will tell you that as long as there's demand, there will always be entrepreneurs with a supply ready to make a profit. When a drug dealer is busted, it's nothing more than a job opening for someone else to fill. This is Economics 101. Join Students for Sensible Drug Policy to help teach lawmakers this simple economics lesson. Visit www.schoolsnotprisons.com to find out more information about SSDP, if there's a chapter at your school, or how to start one. It's time to join the growing opposition to our country's failed war on drugs and start an open, honest, and rational discussion of alternative solutions to our nation's drug problems.
WVQC, People Powered Radio.
Hey, I'm Willie Nelson, and I started the Teapot Party so we could tax, regulate, and legalize marijuana. If you lean a little to the left like us, please join us at Facebook.com/Teapot Party or through your local party, including the Cincinnati Northern Kentucky Teapot Party, or start one in your area. And I like that one. Hi, I'm Willie Nelson. And you're listening to Hemp Rock Radio on Radio Free Queen City, WVQC-LP, Cincinnati 95.7 FM, and WVQC.org, low power to the people. Also on WEEDRadioNetwork.com.
And, of course, it is Hemp Rock Radio. I am the Happy Hemptress. Rolling up the pot is, of course, the Burn Man. And we were talking a bit about the Prohibition program. I'm going to talk more about that in just a few minutes. But this song is dedicated to the Ken Burns Prohibition on PBS. Started Sunday, ran last night. Tonight is part three. Come back in just a few minutes here on Hemp Rock Radio, and we'll give you a rundown on what that program is about.
Take you back to year 1919, a time to look to for remembering. Go to the store with a nickel or dime, but keep one thing in mind, it's Prohibition time. Don't let that keep you from going out, gonna drink in spite of the illegal drought. But remember when somewhere down the line, when you're busted with wine, it's Prohibition time. Prohibition time, yes, it's Prohibition time. When you're busted with wine, it's Prohibition time. There is one difference between now and then. The underground has since grown from within. Today we're playing with a different game. Here comes Mary Jane, and it's all just the same. Prohibition time, yes, it's Prohibition time. When you're busted with wine, it's Prohibition time. I'll take you back to year 1919, a time to look to for remembering. Today we're playing with a different game. Here comes Mary Jane, and it's all just the same. Prohibition time, yes, it's Prohibition time. When you're busted with wine, it's Prohibition time. Well, I'll take you back to year 1919. A time to look to for remembering.
And, of course, it is Hemp Rock Radio. I am the Happy Hemptress. Rolling up the pot is, of course, the Burn Man. But that song that I kicked this segment off with, of course, was called Prohibition Time by Rob Lawrence, and that is dedicated to the PBS special that started airing Sunday night, the first of three segments. The first one was A Nation of Drunkards. A Nation of Drunkards. Last night's episode, A Nation of Scofflaws. And tonight's episode is A Nation of Hypocrites. I like the way they run to what tonight's segment will be. Now, of course, I've not seen it. I can't wait to see it. I've actually not been able to catch both of the two nights in its entirety, but I've caught most of it. I've recorded it. If you have not caught it and did not record it, you can go to pbs.org/KenBurns/Prohibition. Just go to the pbs.org and look up the Prohibition. You'll find it that way. You can also go to my Facebook page and find the link there. Now, what this program is, if you don't know who Ken Burns is, he does documentaries for PBS, and he's done the nation's forests and parks. He's done the Civil War and numerous other great, great 2-, 3-, 4-part documentaries on whatever topic he's chosen. This time they've chosen Prohibition. And yes, folks, that's Prohibition of alcohol, not marijuana. It is the same thing, and it's laughable. Have you caught any of this? Some of us, including myself, for many, many years have been saying, come on, the drug war is just Prohibition all over again. Al Capone created the drive-by shooting, and now the gangs are doing it. Today's gangs. We have lost 40,000 people in the war along the border with Mexico, and that doesn't mean that we're fighting the Mexicans, although some people would like to. It is absolutely ridiculous, comical, astounding. I urge you to watch this program, because if you don't see the parallels and the hypocrisy between prohibition of alcohol and prohibition today of all drugs that are illegal, then you're not paying attention. Now, the thing that astounds me is that people don't look at the timeline. The prohibition, as it's pointed out in this documentary, ran from 1920 up through 1933. Four years later, 1937, they outlawed marijuana. Now, I think they learned their lesson very well on how to prohibit something that people want and then get fat rich while it's outlawed. There's even talk in the show about a woman who was only 32 years old when she was an attorney who fought for women's rights and even defended prostitutes, things like that. I'm going to forget her name, but the president made her Attorney General of the United States in charge of the Division of Alcohol and looking for the alcohol dealers. And she took her job seriously, and she started going after them. And the joke was that she wasn't in on the joke that even her boss drank alcohol that was prohibited. Most of the politicians were corrupt. 3/4 of all the police departments were corrupt. So bad that I believe he was the chief of police up in Puget Sound, up in Washington State, started the running of Canadian alcohol into our country. Now, I'm curious. I've missed some parts here and there. I have not seen yet, and I hope that it'll be pointed out if I've missed it or else in this tonight's episode, about why they stopped using alcohol for fuel back in the day during Prohibition. And that's explained as, we can't have alcohol for the vehicles. The drunks will be wanting to drink the gasoline then. So we have to stop that too. So they broke the ethanol fuel market and brought in the oil industry. So it was intertwined with all sorts of stuff. But, you know, the major connection here, folks, is George Remus. Anybody know George Remus? Well, I did and I didn't. You know, I knew some of the connection, but I really did not know the full story till I just watched this program last night, Prohibition. George Remus, who was a German immigrant with his family at 5, was grew up in Chicago, where the family had moved to. He became a pharmacist, I believe, in his father's drugstore. I'm not sure. So at 19, he became a pharmacist, and then he worked his way, paid his way through college, became an attorney, and actually then started defending people. And he was one of the first attorneys that started using the insanity defense. Then Prohibition and the Volstead Act started, and he went, oh, I see a loophole. You mean if I sell medical alcohol, that's legal, because there's an exemption by the feds that says nobody's allowed to do alcohol unless it's for medicine or for religious purposes. They even said that there were so many more rabbis and so many more people going to the Jewish synagogues. It went from tenfold, from 80,000 families in the synagogues to 800,000 families, because you could get the religious exemption for the wine. And there were rabbis with names like Kelly. So back to the medical. So George Remus says, I see a loophole. So if I sell medical alcohol, I'm legal. So as a lawyer and a pharmacist, he went, well, let's see. Cincinnati happens to be within the circle of 300-mile radius of where the distilleries are for medical alcohol. I think I'll move to Cincinnati. So he goes from Chicago to Cincinnati and becomes one of the biggest bootleggers by buying illegally the alcohol and then selling it through the medical pharmacy. Got rich, paid off everybody, and then the woman who was the attorney general says, we're going to go bust him. She gets him busted. He goes to prison for 2 years for violating the Volstead Act. And then she catches wind of some corruption, and she sends in this guy named Dodge, undercover, pretending to be a prisoner. He buddies up next to George Remus, who was an attorney who's now sitting in jail. By the way, he got fat rich here in Kentucky. If you go over to this, I think it's the Syndicate or something over in Northern Kentucky, or there's another restaurant out over there that tells the story of the mob and the corruption of Newport, Kentucky. This was started by George Remus, folks, the same gentleman. He had a home that they called the Marble Mansion up in the Price Hill area. His distillery, the underground distillery where the tunnel was, where they went and smuggled out the alcohol, was on Queen City Avenue, folks. Lower Price Hill. And so now he's sitting in prison for the 2 years. He gets buddied up by this undercover cop from the feds. Dodge is his name. Tells the guy, he doesn't know he's a cop, tells the guy where all of his alcohol is stored and where his money is and about his wife and everything, who, by the way, was the secretary that he left his wife for and married the secretary. And turns out the undercover cop figures out that him and the warden and somebody else in the with the prison were corrupt, and he was paying them off, and he gets them fired and gets Remus basically screwed. And then he goes and he steals his wife and all of his money, and the wife even sells one of the distilleries and makes $1 million and gives $100 to George sitting in jail, and then strips the house in Price Hill of everything. And when George got out, he goes and finds out, and then he's pissed, and they're in the middle of a divorce. And the story goes is that he sees in his cab the ex-wife with the stepdaughter driving through Eden Park here in Cincinnati towards downtown to the courthouse, and he makes the cab driver run them up to the side of the road to stop them from driving. And he gets out and he shoots his wife, kills her in front of the stepdaughter. And he gets charged with murder, and he gets found by the jury here in Hamilton County, folks, not guilty by reason of insanity. He acted as his own attorney, his own co-counsel, and used the exact same thing that he started out years earlier in Chicago for his clients then. Not guilty by reason of insanity, and he won, folks, right here in Hamilton County. That's a big, big story for Prohibition. Again, I urge you, go watch it. You'll hear about that. That is the last night's episode. Watch it tonight. It airs any PBS station in your area. Here it's 48, and other areas, it's other channels, but check it out, pbs.org. It is fantastic, but it is time to go. It is Hemp Rock Radio. I'm the Happy Hemptress. Birdman rolled up the pot today and is out there rolling it up somewhere at the 420 Appliance Repair. We want to thank Michael Krawitz, and we will be back next week. We're out of here.
CincyGroove.com will be celebrating its 4-year anniversary on November 18th at the Madison Theater in Covington, Kentucky. Music for the evening will be provided by the headliner Acoustic Hookah and local openers Hickory Robot and Carol Walker. CincyGroove.com will also be holding a canned food drive and winter clothing drive to benefit the Free Store Food Bank and St. Vincent de Paul. This will be an all-ages event with doors opening at 7 p.m. and the show beginning at 8 p.m. For more information about the event, go to CincyGroove.com.
This has been the Monday edition of Hemp Rock Radio with the Happy Hemptress, the Burn Man, and featuring the Pottsbury Bakery and Hemp Rock Cafe. Hemp Rock Radio airs Mondays and Tuesdays, 1 p.m. Eastern on WBQC-LP. Find Hemp Rock Radio archives at weedradionetwork.com.
Watch Hemp Rock TV on Northern Kentucky's Insight Cable Channel 21, Cincinnati's Time Warner Cable Channel 4 and 24, and now online at weedradionetwork.com.
You can join the Hemp Rockers list at HempRock.com and the Hemp Rock Hemp Line at 513-684-HEMP. That's 513-684-HEMP. Please visit CincinnatiMarijuanaLaw.com. That's CincinnatiMarijuanaLaw.com. Hemp Rock Radio, the Pottsbury Bakery, and Hemp Rock Cafe are brought to you by Hemp Rock Productions. Thanks for listening to Hemp Rock Radio and Radio Free Queen City, a member of Media Bridges Community Media Center on 95.7 FM WVQC-LP Cincinnati. WVQC-LP broadcasts from Cincinnati's Computer Cooperative Studios. You can listen online, become a member, and support the station at WVQC.org. Coming up next on WBQCLP is Jay Allday with Cincinnati's Conscience, where hippie meets the hood.
WBQC, People Powered Radio.
Cincinnati musicians, interested in submitting your music to be included in our local music library? CDs can be mailed to WVQC at 1100 Ray Street, Cincinnati, Ohio 45202, 513-651-4171, extension 11, or email to wvqcprogramming@mediabridges.org. Radio edits only, please.
Coming to you from the Cincinnati Computer Cooperative Studios, this is WVQC LP Cincinnati 95.7 FM.